How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. Today it's just one Jay. That's me, Jay King. John Corrales is absent, but we do have guest Brad Rowland of Peachtree Hoops and the brand new Locked On Hawks podcast. This is going to be a podcast collaboration. We're going to be talking about Al Horford to the Boston Celtics, the latest acquisition. We're going to be talking about the Hawks offseason, which was interesting to me, and by interesting I mean really strange, possibly bizarre, maybe a step backwards for that team. But first, Brad, I want to ask you, what were your initial thoughts when Al Horford left the Atlanta Hawks and landed with the Boston Celtics this summer?
It was pretty surreal. I was actually at dinner when that news broke, and right before that, it broke that the Hawks were kind of nearing the finish line with Horford, and that the other teams, including the Celtics, were kind of bowing out of the sweepstakes. A couple of reports of that surfaced, so we were pretty confident he was coming back. So when it happened, and when he tweeted out the cloverleafs, it was a pretty big surprise to everybody in Atlanta, especially those of us who are close to the situation. Having Horford have been there for 9 years. So seeing a guy like that who's been sort of a linchpin of the organization for most of that time move on was pretty surprising and pretty weird, I guess, is the right word to use it. Just because, you know, if he's not the best player on the team now, he's, you know, 1B on that list. And with that, it's a huge blow for the Hawks and just a huge blow for continuity and everything that he meant to the situation. So it was a surprise to be sure. And a lot of Hawks fans are not terribly happy about it. Some of them are. It's, you know, it's typical divided fan base. But it's definitely going to be weird to see the Hawks without Al Horford on the court for the first time in nearly a decade.
Yeah, one thing I read that was pretty interesting to me is someone said since Dominique Wilkins, Horford has probably been the most important player in Hawks franchise history. Is that something you would agree with?
I think so. I mean, it's really a combination of it's Horford, it's Joe Johnson, and it's maybe Dikembe Mutombo. It's not exactly as if the Hawks have had this long storied history since Dominique. It's about 30 years now of not being, more recently the organization has been pretty good and put together a lot of winning seasons, but nothing in terms of like making deep, deep finals run, for instance. They've never reached NBA finals. So Horford, given his tenure, the length of it with 9 years, it's longer than Joe Johnson, it's longer than Mutombo and guys like that. I think there's definitely a reasonable argument to make for him. I'm not sure Horford's peak is as high as somebody like Mutombo, who was the defensive player of the year while he was with the Hawks and was obviously one of the best centers in the league during his peak. But when you throw in the longevity stuff, I think it's perfectly reasonable to think that Horford is the most important player since Dominique. And that, again, you know, that adds to the fact that, and the sting of him leaving while he's basically in his prime. I mean, obviously he's 30 years old now, so he's nearing the tail end of his prime. But at the same time, he's still a very, very good player, a top 30 player in the league in my estimation. And when a guy like that walks away for nothing, it's definitely not great for the franchise.
Yeah, it's funny because the Hawks were always known as like the team without stars. And then when Horford left, it's like the Celtics finally got their star.
It is pretty funny. I laughed a lot about some of those headlines. And look, I'm a guy who thinks Horford is a star and has thought that. It's just that he plays a brand of basketball that's not your typical superstar brand. So I get why people don't see it necessarily. But top 30 player in the league, I think you qualify as a star. He may not be a super-duper star, but that's a star for me.
Yeah, he's a game changer for sure. And I think the way the Celtics play, he should fit right in. He's much better shooter than Jared Sullinger was. He's much more mobile. He's very versatile. I think he'll fit right in. One thing that's really struck me about Horford while I read about him and try to get caught up in who he is as a person, teammates seem to love him. I was reading an article from Zach Lowe last season, I believe, and it was titled like something about Atlanta's superstar, Al Horford, that nobody knows about. And the things players said about him, like they just had this heightened sense of his value. Like they understood he did things that nobody else understood. And they also just seemed to think he was one of the greatest teammates. I guess, what did you think his impact was on the team? Not just in ways people can see, the shot blocking and the shooting and the pick and roll stuff, but other than that, What was his biggest impact over his 9 years with the Hawks?
Yeah, I mean, I think the easiest way to magnify and measure that is that I don't think I've ever heard anybody say a negative thing about Al Horford around the team, especially. He's not exactly the loudest guy in the world. He's not exactly like the most vocal leader in the public sphere, but he was clearly a leader for the Hawks, and everybody looked up to him as sort of the guy who had been here and sort of the guy who was taking on a leadership role at his age, even when he was much younger. I mean, even when he was, I remember him being about, 24, 25 and sort of right before he signed that last contract and sort of being a leader at that stage as the best player in the organization and definitely a vocal guy who leads by example and by what he says. So, the overarching theme was that he's very important to his teammates. He's very a guy who you never have to worry about off the court, best of the community. That was one of the things that surprised people, is that he was so invested in Atlanta. But I think that will carry over to Boston as well. He's so, just basically a good guy. It's by all accounts, but players, coaches, media, he's great to the media. He's not exactly, again, not your money quote guy, but in terms of saying things that are going to rile people up, but always there to talk to you, always there, always willing to talk to people. Just a leader, all around good guy. Obviously a great player on the court, but the best way to describe Al Horford is that I've never heard a single negative thing about him in terms of his personality, his makeup. Just a family guy. I'm glowing about Al Horford because it's easy to do so. He's that legit of a guy from everything that I know about him. And Boston's gonna get a good one with him for sure.
Maybe the only guy who's ever said anything bad about him is Tommy Heinsohn, the Celtics color commentator.
Oh yeah, that didn't go over well in Atlanta, as you might imagine. And I'm sure people, the Hawks fans that are happy to see Al go, because they do exist. Horford has some knocks on him, especially for the casual fan, with some the rebounding stuff. And there's ways to attack his game, but those people are probably going to jump on with Tommy now. But it'll be interesting to see what Tommy says now that he's wearing green for sure.
What are your thoughts on the ways to attack his game?
For me, I've always thought they were overblown, but his rebounding numbers have not been good recently. When you're talking about a center, I think he is a center, but he can play power forward. That's one of the good things about Al Horford, is that he can play both positions quite well because of his shooting, because of his quickness defensively. But there was a lot of stuff about the Hawks needing a true center. That was a claim that a lot of people, even in the media, made here, because Horford again has gotten this thing that where he's not a true center because he's not 7 feet tall and he's not a dominant rebounder. Earlier in his career, he was actually a very, very good rebounder, but some of the ways that the Hawks have played under Mike Budenholzer have kind of limited his ability to get rebounds, especially offensive rebounds. This is a team that plays sort of a five out system with Horford because they can, and that takes him away from the basket a lot. I think he's a perfectly acceptable rebounder when he's asked to do that. And obviously, the numbers aren't terrible there, but that's been a knock on him, is that he's not that true shot blocker, defensive rebounder. I think he's a pretty good shot blocker, again, like a pretty good rim protector, but he's not going to be a guy who leads the league in blocks, that kind of stuff. And there's a segment of the Hawks fan base that is really excited to see Dwight Howard as a true center, which I laugh about because Al Horford's taller than Dwight Howard. If you stand them next to each other, Al Horford's about an inch or two taller than Dwight. So I think the Celtics are going to be just fine in terms of what they're going to get out of Horford's rebounding and shot blocking and rim protection. But that's been an area where people have tried to pick him apart, and I blame a lot of it on the system personally. And it's been a joke. I think the first person I heard say this was Zach Harper over at CBS Sports. But if Al Horford didn't play next to Joakim Noah in college, I think we would not hear any of the stuff about him being a true center. He just happened to play with Noah in college, and who everybody sees as a center, in fact. But it was one of those things where those guys were kind of twin towers in college, and for some reason the stigma stuck to Horford that he was a power forward more so than Noah. But I think he's perfectly capable of playing quality center and power forward. So there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and I think earlier in his career, right, he wanted to be a power forward, and so I'm sure that probably had something to do with it. It's funny when you talk about rim protection, because apparently Hawks fans thought he wasn't great at it. Celtics fans are like, he is such a major upgrade. Like, he is a huge upgrade compared to what the Celtics have had with Jared Sullinger. And now I think Celtics fans are really excited to see him alongside Amir Johnson, another very good defender, very, very versatile defender, and see what those guys can do. So it's funny that those are the ways he was criticized in Atlanta, because in Boston it'll be such a big improvement that everyone will just be really excited about him. The Hawks offseason was very strange to me. And from the way they approached the Horford thing, almost like it was a done deal, to adding Dwight Howard. I get why you trade Jeff Teague, but that probably lowers the talent level of your team too. What have been your thoughts on this offseason so far from the Hawks, and where they are in the Eastern Conference hierarchy going into next season?
I was pretty confused by it all. The total package was something that I did not see coming and didn't really like, to be, you know, frank about it. The Teague trade was the first domino. I actually was kind of in favor of that. It was more so that I knew it was coming. You know, most people around the team expected one of the point guards between Teague and Dennis Schroeder to be gone before next season, and it made more sense to part ways with Teague. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent after next season, and they, you know, at the age, I think he'll be 29 when he hits free agency. The Hawks were not going to pay big money to keep Jeff Teague, so selling on him now when they can get a lottery pick for him made some sense to me, and the team really likes Dennis Schroeder. I'm not necessarily as sold as the team is on Schroeder, but he does have talent. He does have upside. He's very young, so I understood that. But after that, I think things kind of flew off the rails. The Dwight Howard thing, I don't really love. It does bring some upside to the table, in terms of if he's able to recapture his form from a couple of years ago. You know, even as recently as about a year and a half ago in the playoffs, he looked like his old self when he was able to play at maximum effort. And the Hawks will be good at being able to maintain him, keeping his minutes low, perhaps resting him sometimes as he gets up there, up into his 30s now. But in terms of as a player, I think Howard's kind of taken a step back. So, you know, as a one-on-one comparison, I think Horford's the better player between the two right now. And given that Howard is older, and, you know, his game for me does not mature as well as Horford's does. Horford being a good jump shooter, even more of a positional guy, should age better, I think, than Howard does, with his reliance on athleticism, the way that he explodes and uses his frame to really do most of the damage for him. And that, not that he's not skilled, but not a shooter necessarily. So I thought that was a downgrade, and really not a lot of cost savings. They paid market value for Howard, which surprised me. I thought if they brought him in, it would have been at a discount, and that didn't happen. And then obviously letting Horford get away didn't make a lot of sense to me. There was, you know, the reports are out there that the team and Horford were about $5 million apart total over 5 years. And if that's true, that's kind of frustrating for people around the Hawks to say, look, you let this guy get away for $1 million a year. And, you know, if that's true, then it's a definitely questionable decision. And as it stands now, I think the team is worse short term with Howard and without Teague than they were last year. And, you know, long term, you know, maybe Schroeder's upside is higher than Teague's is, but Howard's upside is not really there in the long term. Maybe this year he's good and can reestablish himself as a top flight center. But that's a lot. There's a lot more risk on this team now, and I'm not sure the safety level is there. And it was kind of just a baffling series of events, especially when you factor in that Paul Millsap will be a free agent after next season, and he's the best player on the team right now. So, yeah, I know I'm not trying to be super negative here, but the Hawks guys, there's some people that love it. I mean, I don't love it. There's some people that do. It's people that really, you know, my joke was that Dwight Howard is more famous than Al Horford. So that makes it an upgrade in the mind of some people, but I definitely didn't love it. What'd you think about it?
I just thought the whole thing was bizarre. To let Horford go, if it really was just a difference of $5 or $6 million over the span of a 5-year contract, that's just outrageous in today's day and age. Like, he is a as you said, a top 30 player, maybe better than that. He's theoretically in his prime. He just had a very, very good season. And he's better than Dwight Howard. He's younger than Dwight Howard. As you say, like, it was just bizarre to me how they approached the whole thing. Almost like either they wanted Horford to go and were kind of pushing him out the door and thought Dwight Howard was a better option there alongside Millsap, or like they thought no matter how they treated Horford, he was going to come back to Atlanta in the end. It just seems like they botched everything. Like they, if they wanted to keep Horford, they completely screwed up. And I think they screwed up from the trade deadline. Like, throwing his name out there in trade rumors, they were the most leaked team in the NBA last year at trade deadline. Like, everybody was on the market. Everybody was being explored. And I get it. He was a free agent. Obviously, you don't want to risk losing him for nothing. But for a guy who was there for 8 years, and from the sound of it, he wanted to stay in Atlanta, or at least was very, very open to staying in Atlanta when the free agency process started. And it just seemed like he got pushed away. And now they have the Millsap thing, and who knows what they'll do with him with a year left on his contract. He's already in trade rumors. He might be getting alienated by that. Have you thought, like, about what they're going to do with Millsap and what could happen there? What are your thoughts about what they're going to do with him?
Yeah, it's bizarre. Letting Horford go in retrospect for nothing was it's really a blow. And just in that, you mentioned the leaks at the trade deadline. It would have been better, obviously, to trade him if they were going to not just pony up the money. We all kind of assumed that they were going to pony the money up. Once they kept him on board through the trade deadline, it was like, okay, they're just going to pay Al Horford. So, it would be interesting to note in the future if something comes out as to whether the Hawks were just ready to move on or not. In terms of Millsap, this is, again, they're going to face a similar decision now. I think this team is worse right now than it was last year, meaning that there's a real possibility this is like a 500-ish team at the trade deadline. I'm not, it might be better than that, but not much better. And if you're that and you see Paul Millsap at the age of, he'll be 32 when he hits free agency, facing a massive contract as a guy who's played more than 10 years in the league, you almost have to trade him. The options are trade him now, trade him at the deadline for something to get something, so get some value back, or you're either going to have to pay him a 4 or 5 year max contract that's going to start in like the $30 to $35 million range. And I love Paul Millsap, but you don't want that contract on your books from the ages of 32 to 35 or 36. You just don't want that deal. So they put themselves in a weird spot. That's why I thought it made some level of sense if they just definitely wanted to sign Howard, which I wouldn't have done. But if they just decided they wanted to do that, it would have made more sense to just to still max out Horford, have him play power forward, and then trade Millsap. Because if they had, which was, that was the proposal, and late in the game was that the Hawks were still trying to sign Horford even after they signed Howard. If they were able to pull that off and then trade Millsap, at least you would have some assets that you would get back for Millsap, and you still have a top flight player in Horford locked down for the foreseeable future. Now there's just so much uncertainty with Millsap, a guy we all love, but at the same, I think he's the best player on the team right now, but I don't think this is a finals team right now by any stretch. I mean, even if I try to be as positive as possible, it might be a 51 roster if everything goes right. Dennis Schroeder explodes, Dwight Howard gets his stuff back, and maybe this is a 3 seed, maybe a 2 seed if everything goes perfectly. They're not beating Cleveland with this roster, so it might be time to look at dealing Millsap. I think they're going to wait until the season starts at this point. They could, maybe if they're bowled over by an offer in the offseason, they might consider it, but signing Howard is a move that you do if you want to compete this year, if you want to win games and you want to avoid rebuilding. So maybe they want to see this thing happen for a couple of months, and if they're not happy with it, maybe they'll look to trade Paul and get some value for him.
Yeah, that one thing, I almost felt like they built an Eastern Conference contender almost accidentally. Like obviously they put together a crop of really, really good players, but I don't think anyone expected it to mesh as well as it did, the way they did in that 60-win season, and I don't think anyone expected them to be that close. It seems to me like they were almost taken by surprise that they were that good. I don't know if that makes sense, but like they weren't prepared to have an aging team be that close to being contenders, but then Cleveland showed like they were really far away at the same time. So it was like a tough decision. Do you keep the team? Do you try to go forward? Do you try to, you know, trade Teague, go a different direction? What do you do with Horford, Millsap? It was like they were just like a flash of lightning and so awesome to watch and so fun. And then all the decisions happen at the same time, and like now they kind of resemble what they were, but not really, and they're going to have to play a lot differently. Just who knows where they are in the Eastern Conference now. I would guess Boston will finish with more wins in them next year, although, you know, who knows what happens, especially with Dwight. Dwight Howard's a wild card, man. Like, who knows what he'll give you? I don't know whether he gets out of Houston and all of a sudden he looks young again. He obviously has the body issues, but if he can be healthy, man, that dude is good. So, yeah, there is upside there. One thing I want your opinion on is the Hawks fan base. And
this here we might, go.
this might get you in trouble, but Horford's father, and Horford came out and said, I didn't feel this way. I was mad at my father for saying that. But Horford's father mentioned that it was tough for his son to be in the playoffs. And I was there. I traveled to Atlanta. And it was a weird feel, man. It's just like they're not fully invested in that team. What are your thoughts about the fan base? What is wrong there? Why did that city not embrace that team as much as it, like, that was a fun team. I know they probably weren't true contenders ever, but they were close, and they really were just an entertaining club to watch, and the excitement level just wasn't there, I thought.
Yeah, it's bizarre. You won't get me in trouble. This is stuff that we talk about all the time on Peachtree Hoops, and you know, stuff that I contribute to locally. It's a bizarre setup. You know, the Hawks have never been a prime, you know, attraction in Atlanta since Dominique. I mean, the 60 win team 2 years ago, for about 2 months there, when they went undefeated in January. The place was packed and kind of rolling, and it was very weird almost, because the Hawks had never been that in my adult life, for sure, but really, you know, possibly even my lifetime. Just because there was actually an energy there, they were selling the place out every night. It was very almost strange. It was fun, but this has not been. My line is always that the NBA, the Atlanta is an NBA town, but not a Hawks town. It's a star-driven town. It's an event-driven town. So I think that having a legitimate star could change that. But, you know, if you look at the national TV ratings for the NBA, Atlanta is always a top-10 market. But if you look at the Hawks ratings, the ratings are never good. There's a ton of basketball fans in Atlanta, a ton of NBA fans. They just don't like the Hawks. Either for whatever reason they grew up somewhere else, or they grew up in Atlanta and were still mad about Dominique not, you know, being traded, or something like that. There's any number of reasons, but there's, you know, there's obviously a loyal fan base. There's a lot of fans that are very loyal, very passionate. It's just not as many as you would expect in a city as large as Atlanta. So they have trouble selling the place out. They have trouble, as you mentioned, like even in the playoffs, if it's not a sexy matchup, if it's not LeBron on the other side, they might have some empty seats. I was at the Boston series. It's the same thing. I mean, Boston's has been a main rival for Atlanta for a long time, to where the Hawks fans don't like the Celtics a lot, and they still couldn't generate the type of buzz that I would expect them to for a playoff series. So it's very odd. I've always thought it was very odd. There are local passionate fans, but I think it's more of just Atlanta has. There's a lot of stuff going on in Atlanta. It's not a Hawks problem. It's a really Atlanta sports problem. Even when the Braves were rolling in baseball, winning division after division after division, making the World Series, they still couldn't sell out the place. So it's an Atlanta sports problem, I think. Outside of the Falcons when they're good, everything else, and you throw in the college sports dynamic as well, being that in the South, college sports is really number one. College football kind of dominates the landscape in Atlanta. So, behind college football in the NBA, I mean, in the NFL, I think the NBA is somewhere in that fourth range behind baseball and football. And you know, the Hawks have to be they're trying to fight to get interest. They're always it's always a hustle for them to try to get people in the building. I think that might have been part of the Howard stuff. I don't want to say it was totally driven by that or by ownership, because I don't know that to be true. But it didn't seem like a terribly Hawks move to sign a guy like Dwight Howard, other than the fact that he's from Atlanta and could generate some interest. So a lot of people have asked me specifically if that was a ticket driven move, and it could have been, at least part of it. It could be that he's also just a big name and a big star, and maybe they think that he's going to be back to his old self. But Atlanta is an interesting place, so you won't get me in trouble by saying for me to say that. I'm pretty vocal about it. I kind of make fun of the fans, and I'll defend them too. If people take shots, I'll defend the fan base, because I know there are loyal fans. I know we have our readership is passionate at Peachtree Hoops, and but at the same time, there just should be more of them, and it is frustrating for sure.
I knew there were a lot of passionate fans, because I think before either game one or game two of the first round series this year, I tweeted out a picture of the stands.
Oh, they'll kill you for that. They'll come out.
Man, I got crushed. Like my mentions were as mean spirited as they've ever been. Just Atlanta fans not very happy with me.
Well, it's the thing where the fan base, that's all they ever hear is how they're not there. So the ones that do show up get very protective of the fact that they do show up. So you are not the first, and you won't be the last to get the wrath of the Hawks fan for sure on that one.
it was funny, because I was just expecting, it just wasn't a playoff environment, but it was definitely a playoff tweeting environment after I sent out that tweet. Before I let you go, I have one last question, and this might be a weird one. I'm not sure anyone from the Locked On Celtics podcast listeners will care about this, but it's something that I've thought for a little while, maybe dating back to last season, but especially this year when the Hawks just crushed the Celtics. Like, that their defense was absolutely smothering from the All-Star break on. The Hawks had, I want to say, the top-rated defense. Were just an absolute juggernaut defensively. Millsap was unreal. Horford was great. Bazemore, a lot of the, like, they just switched and they just swarmed people. The Celtics couldn't find any openings. And then they go to Cleveland and they play Cleveland and they just get shredded. And that's two straight years. Do you think there's a scheme issue there where their defense is set to kind of take advantage of average or better than average opponents, but when they face elite teams, that it becomes more of an issue that they try to fly around so much or whatever it is? Is that just me making things up, or is that maybe a legitimate issue?
I think you might be on the right track there. This is a defense, and really offense too, for Mike Budenholzer, that's so system driven. That it works great in the regular season and in certain matchups on both ends of the court. But if you face a bad matchup, it can be real big trouble. I think beyond that, though, the Cleveland matchup is especially treacherous because of LeBron. And, you know, obviously LeBron's a problem for everybody. But
yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's okay. but especially for Atlanta, because, you know, that's the one thing the Hawks haven't had in recent memory is a guy who can really defend those big power wings. You know, you mentioned Kent Bazemore. He's a very good defender. Even Thabo Sefolosha is a very good defender. But those guys are more frail. They're more slight in frame. Bazemore's about 6'4", 6'5". And you're talking about a guy on LeBron that's, you know, 6'8", 260. Not having a guy that can cover him at all, even respectably one-on-one, really, really kills them in that matchup, because they have to kind of run two guys at LeBron. And if you run two guys at LeBron, he's going to kill you with his passing. And he does that. And Cleveland has so much shooting around him that they basically just can't do anything about it. The options are let them hit 23s a game or let LeBron have 45 a game, and neither one of those options are going to work. I mean, that was the thing about. I mean, there was the one game where Cleveland set the NBA record for threes in a game, and it was just this avalanche. And part of it was that they just made every shot they took, but they were all open. That was the problem, and they were trying to not let LeBron beat them, but LeBron's so good as a passer that, you know, you have to give something to get something, and if they were giving away open threes, and that was not going to happen. So I think this is a better defensive team than they're giving credit for. You mentioned the numbers after the All-Star break. They finished the year as the number two defensive rating team in the NBA. So it's not like this is a broken defensive system, at least last year with Horford. We'll see how it is now with Howard at the center of that. But that one matchup against a power wing like LeBron or Paul George or somebody in that vein has really been a problem for the Hawks. And, you know, they didn't really add anybody that can do that. The two rookies they drafted have that profile, especially Torian Prince, their lottery pick. Could be that in the future. He's not going to be that as a rookie because rookies are not good. I'm sure you're having this problem in Boston, is having to tell people that, look, rookies are not going to be huge factors on a playoff team in their rookie season. But, look, it's going to be – LeBron's a problem for everybody. So that's kind of been the white whale for the Hawks, and it will still continue to be. Even if they're better than I think they're going to be this year, they're still not going to have the power to get through a guy like LeBron. So.
Yeah, Torian Prince is a huge dude, by the way.
Oh, I was impressed standing next to him. I was like, okay, this is the power wing they've been looking for. I mean, I'm not sure he's going to be the guy that on the court, but he has the build for it. He's the build that nobody on the team has right now, which is nice to have.
Yeah, he came in for a workout with the Celtics, and I was like, Jesus, this dude is a small forward, unreal. But Brad, thanks for coming on, man. Really appreciate the time. For everyone listening, we're the Locked On Celtics podcast. Check us out on iTunes. Check us out on Audio Boom. Subscribe. Give us 5-star ratings. You know you love us. Everybody knows you love us. Yeah, Al Horford, he's on the Celtics now. Sorry, Hawks fans who don't like that. Dwight Howard, he could be good, though. He could be really good. Brad, we really appreciate your time. Take care. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Reign of Jays, although in this case, it's just me, Jay King, today.